Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver the week's top headlines in cannabis and hear experts weigh in on the impacts these stories are having on the industry. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Today, we are going to dive into federal legalization prospects for 2021. For our listeners that do not know, New Frontier Data is headquartered in Washington, D.C., so we are thrilled to have a true D.C. insider on as our guest today. Our guest was recently selected by Politico as Who to Know on K Street for Cannabis Lobbyist and was named 2020 Influencer of the Year in the Industry Power Women Awards. She was a driving force for the creation and launch of the National Cannabis Roundtable and currently serves as the principal and CEO of the Liaison Group, which was the first and remains the only Washington, D.C.-based lobbying firm exclusively focused on cannabis industry. Please welcome Safira Lagaloub. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be back and to be with you for the first time. And of course, to be back again with John, with whom I've known for many, many years and have enjoyed a great relationship. So really excited about being with you on this really exciting time.
I know. I feel like I don't need to be on the phone right now or moderate this because you guys are old friends, but I'll do my best. And as you said, our next guest is our in-house expert. He is the Chief Knowledge Officer at New Frontier Data. Please welcome the brilliant Mr. John Cagia.
Delighted to be back and doubly so to be here for this conversation with Safira.
All right. Well, we have a lot to cover, so we're going to dive right in. Reuters reported U.S. House of Representatives approves cannabis banking bill. So the House recently passed legislation that would allow banks to provide services to cannabis companies in states where it is legal again. So Safira, I want to toss it to you. What kind of impact would the Safe Banking Act have on operators?
So the Safe Banking Act is a federal legislation that would create a safe harbor for depository institutions, which would allow for financial institutions, credit unions, and banks to extend financial services to cannabis business operators. There are several, we can estimate between 40 and 50 around the country who have robust programs, but this would really create a legal pathway for those financial institutions to be able to bank with the cannabis industry stakeholders. And what this means is a safer cannabis community. This means that more deposits are going to be put in banks. This means that the banks that are currently wanting to loan out to their communities now have more money in their depository coffers to do so. So it's not just cannabis industry for cannabis industry, it's cannabis industry for community. It also means that the cannabis industry is safer so that employees aren't dealing in cash, that they don't have to take cash from the cannabis coffers to safety deposit boxes or wherever they're storing. It means there's more tax revenue that communities can account for in assessing how cannabis industry operators are accounting for the money that they're generating and the taxes they're paying. So that's kind of the beginnings of it. And the final piece I want to say, because I will end my conversation, is that this is a huge impact. It would be a huge impact for minority business cannabis industry stakeholders. You know, many of these programs around the country are requiring social equity license is become available for minority participants, those most disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. But without access to capital and access to loans, these people are not going to be able to get into the industry or grow up and sustain a business. So safe banking is really the first and most important legislative reform for the future of the cannabis industry and the future of making right what has been decades of wrong.
Right. Well, the bill passed 321 to 101, so with broad bipartisan support, and just like it did in 2019 before it went to the Senate to die. So how has the outlook changed for 2021? Or has it?
Yeah, so we got 106 Republicans in this, which was 15 more than we had last time. And every Democrat who voted in favor. The construct of, I understand why you said it went to the Senate to die. I don't really think it went to die in the Senate. It just didn't advance in the way that it needed to. But yeah, we did really improve our support. So, and that's evidenced in the Senate by the fact that we have 7 co-sponsors now on the Republican side. I mean, Senator Daines, an outstanding new champion for cannabis reform, really came along because of the work done last year. So he didn't just wake up and say, I want to support cannabis reform. It's been years and years of cultivating and explaining and informing. And then, of course, things happening in his state. We also expanded sponsorship with Mr. Cassidy and Ms. Loomis. And having a growing number of Republicans support cannabis as of the time of this filming, I think it's 34 senators. I don't know when this is going to be aired. And we're working pretty fervently on expanding the number of co-sponsors for that bill. So the trajectory has changed because the support has changed. The support has changed because the political climate has changed. And that's all because the industry is doing so well by its industry stakeholders, but also it's really showing itself as an engine of economic growth for our whole country.
Amazing. So John, you and I have talked about how just like the education portion of this is so important. And just, I guess we needed this year to kind of get people more educated. What is your outlook, John, as far as for 2021?
I echo everything that Safira has said about kind of how critical this bill is. But it's also happening at a time that we're seeing such a phenomenal sea change in attitudes around cannabis, around the national kind of legalization landscape, around the global conversation, that we think that it is, you know, increasingly challenging for lawmakers who may have had reservations or been opposed to this to continue to kind of rally against cannabis, given where public attitudes are. Now, clearly, there's still quite a lot more movement that still needs to be happened before one is able to secure a majority of conservative or Republican support for these changes. But, you know, we are dealing with an industry that is kind of converging from two different kind of angles or two different perspectives. The first is this kind of phenomenal sea change in how the public feels about cannabis, how comfortable they are with legalization, how ready they are to have it regulated, and the growing recognition about the inequity with which prohibition has been enforced. But on the flip side is also the explosive growth of the legal market. And, you know, as you look out at the scale of the cannabis economy, $20 billion in 2020, forecast to grow to $45 billion just in the states where it's currently legal by 2025, it gets to a point where the continued operation of this industry without a solid kind of financial basis becomes kind of unsustainable, not only because of the kind of operational risks and security risks created by having to deal with this much cash in what is quickly becoming a cashless economy. But also too, you know, in terms of allowing the industry to grow and flourish and meaningfully kind of challenge and compete against the illicit market, cash issue, the financial access issue is forefront. So whether it's the kind of political class recognizing that their constituents are now fully behind this issue, or whether it's those who are more kind of focused on the finance and operations of the market who are recognizing that the current modus operandi is just not sustainable. I think there's a lot of convergent reasons that are leading to this growing momentum that we're seeing in Congress for some type of action.
That's awesome. Well, it's good to know that we're moving in the right direction. But getting a little more into the Senate, Marijuana Moment reported that advocates float new strategy to pass marijuana legalization in Senate with Democrat support in question. So we know that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has committed to pursuing cannabis legalization, but getting the necessary votes is still a challenge. Some advocates are suggesting the policy change should be pursued through budget reconciliation rather than a standalone legislation. Safira, for people that are not familiar with the ins and outs of Capitol Hill, what does this mean? How would you describe that, like the climate in Washington and when it comes to federal cannabis reform?
Well, there's a lot of questions in that.
So. I feel like it's so complicated and complex I feel like dumb it down for everyone.
Let me unpack it a little bit. I mean, the first thing I'd like to say is that advancing cannabis reform for budget reconciliation is actually not a new argument. I know that that's the way it's reported, but that's not correct. I mean, we have been looking at mechanisms and vehicles and pathways, including, you know, budget reconciliation since before budget reconciliation was a household name. And as a reminder, I don't want to spend our time together to go into the ins and outs of Senate procedural politics, but let's just suffice it to say that because of Senate rules, almost all legislation requires 60 votes to be successful. Standalone bill that's packed with a lot of different pieces must pass. The exception to that are budget-related measures, which only require 51. So if you want fewer number of senators needed to pass your bill, you'd like to use that mechanism. The problem is that mechanism only allows for provisions or policies or legislation that specifically has a direct impact on the budget. Let's just say that. And so as you were reading in the national press, there was a big attempt, for example, to pass minimum wage reform through budget reconciliation. And so the rules around what's allowed and what's not allowed is what we're talking about. How broad are the guardrails are going to be? So whether cannabis reform is going to be able to take that pathway will depend on, as always, a bigger question on how flexible Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is going to be in how, we'll call it elastic, he's going to allow his budget reconciliation bill to be. And it's not just his decision, it's also the parliamentarian. So cannabis reform advocates, lobbyists, we all have to look at what's going on with broader political play. Now, one thing, so that's kind of give you a sense of what's where we are in the process. More important, Heather, is where we are in the politics. As a reminder, Chuck Schumer, Senator Ron Wyden, who's the chairman of the Finance Committee, and Cory Booker, who's been a champion for cannabis reform since we've ever known what his name is. I mean, he is as authentic and as nascent in this fight as anyone, are really looking to advance comprehensive reform. And we are waiting for some of us very impatiently and eagerly for Senator Schumer's bill to be introduced, because he's made a commitment to do that it's a trilogy of leadership. And when you have the Senate Majority Leader committing to advance a bill with the Senate Committee Chairman of the Committee of Jurisdiction, Ron Wyden, from a state, one of the earliest to legalize, you know you're going to get some progress. But that bill is going to be big, it's going to be robust, and it's going to be complicated. Meaning it's going to have a lot of elements that fall outside of what would be allowed in budget reconciliation. The conclusion to this is the only way that you could, if you wanted to really, really stretch to get anything in budget reconciliation, you'd have to slice and dice comprehensive reform. And that's where we absolutely, in the politics, do not have agreement with advocates. It would mean that you'd have to advance tax reform, maybe, but not social equity reform. Criminal justice reform couldn't go into budget reconciliation, but maybe a capital markets reform could. And so because you have this intra-industry political dynamic about advancing reform comprehensively as opposed to incrementally, it is still unclear whether or not the politics of cannabis reform would make the actual procedural potential, even if it was potential, possible. So that's a lot of words, but I want to make sure to see if I described it in a way that
I think it was great. It seems like in the article at the beginning, it kind of says this is a simple workaround, but then it says, but then there's all these other complex layers to it that
it's
are
not simple. It is not
at all.
No.
John, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I'm not sure I could have put it any better than Safira did. this is a really messy issue, and you know, we think that this is one of the great examples of a theme that we've been expressing over the past year or so, which is even as legalization may be becoming easier in terms of getting states to make this transition to expand access for either medical use or adult use, regulation is almost conversely becoming more complicated. As you've moved away from the Pacific states where there was largely consensus around, you know, that it was time to reform cannabis rules, broadly speaking, the Pacific states have been historically very open to cannabis and the way it is regulated in their states. And so it was really easy to get, it was relatively comparatively easy to get laws and regulations passed there. But as you have moved eastward and now started to include states that are more narrowly divided, states that have conservative majorities, either in the population or in their legislatures, then this gets really, really difficult, finding solutions and approaches that meet both either Democrat or Republican or liberal conservative ideals for a cannabis economy. So these complications, make it, in our opinion, more difficult to prognosticate about when reform is going to happen and what form it's going to take, in its final form. It is heartening and exciting that there's been so much momentum, both at the state level and now building at the national level. But advocates in particular, I think, should remain keenly attuned to the reality that this is far from resolved and there's going to be a lot of politics before a final decision is reached.
Well, speaking of momentum in states, Safira, how would you say that the recent activity in New Jersey, New York, and Virginia has affected the conversation around federal policy reform?
It seems like it would affect it significantly because New York's great senator, senior senator, is Chuck Schumer. I'd say that that is a bit of we would love to say that New York legalizes, New Jersey's going to be coming to market, within 9 months plus. Therefore, we're going to get reform. But the U.S. Senate and the U.S. Congress still has a significant amount of work to do. And even though you have progress in those states, you need votes from members of Congress from 48 other states. And so from my vantage point, where I think it could be helpful is that if Leader Schumer realizes that he has to have 60 votes and Leader Schumer desperately wants a bill that resolves the conflict between federal and state law. Notice the way I characterize that, okay? Because there's a lot of different ways you could accomplish that. Mm-hmm. And New York is putting pressure on him to do that. And he needs 60 votes. He'll have to come up with ways that he may not otherwise feel the impetus to do that if New York weren't putting that pressure on him. And so I do think that the legalization places an impetus, not just as a, this is what's happening in the country, but this is what's happening with your constituents, to come up with a pathway that you can get 60 votes for, which means you need 10 Republicans. Oh, and by the way, probably more, because we know at least two Democrats in very recent months, Mr. Tester and Ms. Shaheen, who have overtly articulated their concern and lack of enthusiasm towards legalization.
Actually, a question first for Safira, because that cuts to kind of crux of it, is if this is ultimately going to require potentially majority legislation and a majority vote, and you're in parallel dealing with potentially a couple of defections from the Democrats, if Congress and the White House are facing these options of either rescheduling and or decriminalization versus federal legalization, which do you think we're likely to see coming out of Schumer's office and potentially ultimately making it to the president's desk?
I would never want to second guess or even suggest there should be a compromise from Leader Schumer. We are so excited about his bill, and every hat I wear and role I wear, we are really excited about comprehensive legislative reform. I think Leader Schumer will give us a bill that's predicated on descheduling. Mm. And I think he is going to do everything. And let me tell you, there's nobody better to marshal that forward. Mm. And until he can't do it, that's where he's going. Mm. So I use that, predicated on descheduling. So long as we have Gerald Nadler, which is Congressman Nadler from New York, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House, who is like Senator Booker, has a lifelong commitment towards cannabis reform. As long as he sits at his helm, and Speaker Pelosi is the leader of the House of Representatives, and as long as Leader Schumer is leading the Senate, everything will be a descheduling, a push for descheduling, predicated on descheduling. no other approach. Only if we're not able to accomplish that and we see some sort of a shift in political party, do I think that there may be some room for negotiation where you could see a move towards resolving the conflict through other mechanisms and approaches. Does that answer your question, John?
It does. You know, there's so much hinging on this question of kind of descheduling, decriminalization versus.
You know, you did say something, though, that I actually want to jump into. I'm sorry, Heather, because I think this is important. This is actually a conversation I was having with my director of policy today, given President Biden's conversation last night. You know, we are going to see a police reform bill in the coming weeks. And there is no reason why in that police reform bill we could not see a significant change in the penalization of the penalty codes. We could change the penalties for federal cannabis immediately through that bill. We could even address expungement. We could put money into local programs for expungement in that bill. And that would essentially create a de facto decriminalization of cannabis. And while cannabis would still sit on the schedule where it is now, it would not have the same impact on the human side of cannabis. Because from my perspective, you've got the human side of cannabis, you have the business side of cannabis, and you have the health side of cannabis. The human side is the criminal justice and the problems created by these decades of atrocities by a failed drug policy. The human side, the health side, is of course the impact that cannabis has on, you know, the future of our health, of our world. And on the business side is this opportunity that you were referring to today. And so decriminalizing and expunging immediately. Now, we may not be able to do retroactive work as suggested by the MORE Act, but you could do a lot in that bill through decriminalization. And as another reminder is that CSA doesn't concern itself with the criminality of cannabis. Its decision to be on the schedule or off the schedule is related to health, the whether or not cannabis as a substance has definable and demonstrable health benefits, and whether or not abuse, it's got a tendency towards abuse. So that analysis is different than the analysis for criminal justice. And we've got to be able to think of those separately. And I know that we use the word decrim and deschedule and legalization interchangeably, but from a policy perspective and a political perspective, they are very, very different.
Well, that would be amazing if we could put that in that, to do it through at a federal level. That would be unbelievable. Well, we are almost out of time, but before we go, I would love to get each of yours, you know, final outlook or prediction for when it comes to cannabis legalization for 2021. What are your thoughts? What are your predictions? Safira, I can start with you.
Oh, no. I want to hear what John has to say.
Well, a couple of thoughts. It has been very exciting to see the momentum building around cannabis coming into 2021. And we think that at this pace, 2021 is proving to be an epochal year for cannabis. This is going to be one which we'll look back on as, regardless of what happens next, will be a hugely consequential year for the status and regulation of cannabis in our society. However, you know, for those who are paying attention to the evolving federal debate and dynamic, it is really critical to kind of hone in on the point that Safira just made, the fact that we have been using decrim, descheduling, and legalization interchangeably when they really are not. And whichever approach gets ultimately selected as our initial salvo at federal reform, it will have phenomenal implications for what this industry looks like moving forward. At its most basic, legalization creates a federal apparatus governing cannabis, and descheduling or decriminalization maintains it as a state level issue. That's just one of the kind of broad stroke dynamics that is going to be governed or dictated by the decisions that are going to be made over the next few weeks. And you know, for an industry that has a lot of wind in its sails or in its back, it's difficult to overstate the implications of the federal decision on cannabis governance over the next 12 to 18 months.
All right, Safira, you're in the hot seat.
I'm actually glad that John presented that piece of it, because I want to introduce another construct in as we finish up that this also can't be ignored. Because the question was, when are we going to see legalization, and what is it going to look like? I just want to make sure I'm responding.
Yeah,
to that.
Yeah. No, I just want to get your okay. overall prediction.
No. So I think it's a fair question, and I'm going to answer it in a way that I think is actually more accurate in how people who are interested in this industry need to think about it. So as of now, the only element of federal law where cannabis gets legal protection is through our spending riders. Through the appropriations bills. And right now there is longstanding law. It has to be reapproved every year that defunds the Department of Justice from interfering with implementation of medical cannabis programs. I believe that where we're going to see actual progress in the next 2 years are expansion of the appropriations riders for that to be expanded from medical to adult use. So there will be no money funding the Department of Justice, to interfere with the implementation of any cannabis. I think we're going to see a whole handful of additional riders for other, I don't want to get into it now, but we're currently working on 8 additional riders. I think that the Cole Memorandum or some iteration of it will be reintroduced. And as a reminder for guests, that was rescinded by Jeff Sessions. And what that did was it directed prosecutorial discretion away from all cannabis industry, not just medical. So I think that will be reintroduced specifically because last week the White House, we actually finally had confirmation on the very people whose responsibilities it will be to reinstitute. And that, what I'm calling posture of that agency posture of deference, meaning that agency, Department of Justice, is going to know that cannabis industry stakeholders are, while de facto violating federal law, they're going to give a formal posture of deference to allow that to happen. And I think we're going to see other agencies, not just as in Department of Treasury, like FinCEN, the FinCEN guidance memo to be expanded, but I think we could see it in the Securities Exchange Commission. I think we could see a memo. I think we could see it in immigration policy, in the Veterans Affairs. And so that posture of deference, I think, will be replicated, and we'll see that in the next 2 years. I also think we're going to get to see safe banking or some iteration of it. And how it looks and how it's shaped, I'm not 100% sure, because it depends on what legislative vehicle. I think we're going to see decriminalization. I don't know the vehicle. I think we're going to see some expungements, and I think we're going to see a real meaningful direction of resources towards those communities who've been so atrociously impacted, start to get some reparative justice. I'm not going to promise legalization. I'm from Oklahoma, and in Oklahoma, there's a lot of weather predictions. So I'm not a weather woman from Oklahoma, and I'm not in the prediction business, but I am in the pragmatic policy business. And I think there's real possibilities and pathways for that type of reform. We just have to stay focused. We have to stay coalesced as an industry, and we have to keep our foot on the pressure. We have to keep pressure on our lawmakers and having conversations like this, so you really can better understand what has actually happened versus what's being reported, so we can be our best advocates in our industry amongst ourselves.
Amazing. Well, you promise me you'll come back when this all shakes out, so we can actually have a rehash of this and see where it all ends up. That would be amazing.
If John's here, if it's John and me, I'll do it.
John's always here. John's always with me. He's my wingman.
Absolutely.
He's the brains of this operation.
I know.
All right. Well, thank you so, so much for your time, Safira. And thank you to our listeners for joining us at Canna Week. Please be sure to like and subscribe and hit the notification bell so you don't miss any upcoming episodes. And if you haven't already, please sign up for our free weekly newsletter so you can keep up to date with everything happening. newfrontierdata.com/newsletter-sign-up. I'm your host, Heather Wickline, and we'll see you next time.
New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.